Apple wants to test driverless cars like video games. Microsoft wants to kill the Chromebook. And Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here to tell us what it's really like to spend time in Facebook VR. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1752, recorded Friday, April 21st, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what you need to know about technology, and we hopefully tell you why it matters.
Oh, yeah.
I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Nathan Olivares-Giles, and we have a lot of good stuff today. We're going to get right into it. Apple obtained permits to test self-driving cars earlier this month, but now we've actually got some details on what Apple might be up to thanks to a public records request filed by Business Insider. Apple outlined a training program made up of 7 tests that the company is putting its test drivers through on a private auto course. The report also offered details about what's called the Apple Automated System, as it's being called thus far. According to Business Insider, Apple is using steering wheels and pedals made by Logitech that tap into electronic steering systems on existing cars. Apple's system can send controls to steering wheels, accelerating, decelerating. It can handle sudden lane changes and even U-turns. Apple is so far testing out its system with 6 drivers on 3 Lexus SUVs. Test drivers can use the gas pedal to speed up without overriding Apple's system, but braking will pause the system and allow the testers to take over, which is definitely good in case of emergency, as we've seen with Uber and Google and basically every other self-driving system that's out there. So it seems like Apple's got the basics covered here, but there isn't a ton of kind of detail on how they're going to be communicating with other cars on the road or recognizing obstacles and all sorts of stuff. So it's just kind of the basics so far, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vehicle-to-vehicle communication, that's key. But yeah, there was nothing about that. It sounds like they're testing it like a video game. There's like a joystick and a Logitech steering wheel. Like, it sounds great. I wish that my job was to test the Apple driverless car.
Yeah, it's funny that they chose Logitech, because when I think of Logitech, you know, I'm thinking of keyboards and mice and a lot of accessories. And hey, Logitech makes great stuff. But when I'm thinking of steering wheels and gas pedals and these sorts of things, they're not really an automotive supplier, you know, in the same spirit of so many other companies out there, whether it might be like a performance brand like Edelbrock or something like that, or an actual automotive manufacturer working directly with like Toyota, which owns Lexus or something. I feel like it's kind of interesting that they did choose a Lexus SUV for this, because Google and Uber are also using Lexus SUVs. I would love to know why that is the car du jour, you know, of the moment or whatever, for all of these tests.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I think like the steering wheel, I guess, is eventually we're not going to need it at all, right? I mean, so...
Well, that's, I mean, I guess if you believe that someday we will get to driverless cars, and it seems like an inevitability, then maybe we wouldn't have a use for a steering wheel. But I guess it would make you feel a little better just to see that it's there, even if you never have to touch it. Because I'd rather grab one of those than a joystick. I mean, I've never driven with a joystick in my life, so maybe that's something we should all be testing out.
I guess so. Yeah, it doesn't sound like from these documents that their system is quite as ambitious as like Waymo or some of the other things that we've read about. But what could you tell? I couldn't tell if this was. Had anything, if we heard anything about building a body of a car, or this is just really the system? Because what I would like is an Apple car, like a car that looks a little bit like my iPhone and is glossy, like
the iPhone 7. Jet black, fingerprint prone.
Right, and can take pictures.
Well, you know, what was outlined here was specifically self-driving technology. So specifically systems that control the basic functions of a car. So that's steering, that's accelerating, that's braking, that's those U-turns, that's lane switching, these sorts of things. it didn't go beyond that. So it's not necessarily a fully fledged car, but this is kind of the bare bones tech that's needed to turn the vehicles that we know and drive into the vehicles of the future that we don't drive and we don't operate, right? That drive themselves. So if they are going to build their own car, which, you know, there have been reports that that was something Apple was working on. There have been other reports recently that Apple was changing course and didn't want to actually build a full car. Wherever they go, they need this foundational technology, or else, you know, they're just making something that everybody else is making, and that doesn't seem like the sort of thing that they would be interested in doing. So we'll see where this goes. It is, of course, very early days, but this is what they have permission to test publicly. So what they could be testing on that private course, you know, behind a fence and shroud and all that good stuff, who knows what's there?
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of cars that still require you to drive them, mostly, Tesla is recalling 53,000 cars over an issue with brakes. The company issued the voluntary global recall on certain Model S and Model X vehicles built between February and October 2016. Now, brakes sound scary, but we're talking about the parking brake. In this case, they failed to release. There's been no accidents, and Tesla says they don't think there's a safety issue, but if you have a car that's affected, they'll send you an official recall notice that will include information on how to get the faulty parking brake replaced. Until then, you can keep driving your vehicle, but please don't take your eyes off the road, even in autopilot mode. I have two of these Tesla stories. So let's take this one first. So what do you think about this recall? Is it?
Well, unfortunately, it seems like Tesla is just like every other automaker in the sense that sometimes they have recalls. They can't get it right all the time. You know, it's really the same kind of thing that any automaker is going through, but more so than any other car on the road, Tesla is pretty much more like a computer than, you know, just, you know, an analog, you know, mechanical device. So I would like some clarity here on exactly where the problem is. You know, since they're calling this in, it seems like it's more than just a software fix, right? But these are, the components in Tesla's vehicles are controlled completely and totally electronically. And you get that sometimes with modern vehicles, and sometimes you have the old school, you know, brake and lever and these sorts of things. But it's great that it's just a parking brake. It's great that it's not the sort of thing that could necessarily put someone's lives at risk. But if you're parking your Model S up a hill, then this is definitely going to be pertinent for you. So, you know, I'm glad that they're taking action here.
Okay, I have a question for you. You being a car person and me being a non-car person, do you always put, like, if you're not, I'm not talking about San Francisco Hills or anything, just a flat, you've parked your car, do you put the parking brake on?
I always use the parking brake, but my car is manual. It's a manual transmission, so it's stick. Theoretically, I don't need to use the parking brake every time. But since it's manual, if it's in neutral, then the car could roll. If it's in gear, it's more just me wanting to make sure that everything is as it should be. If you have an automatic transmission car, the thought is that you don't always have to use the parking brake. But since I got used to driving stick, even when I'm driving automatics, I still use it anyways. It's just a matter of habit, kind of better safe than sorry sort of thing. But a lot of people who have automatic transmission cars, which is most of the cars on the road these days, they don't use their parking brakes unless they are up a hill, which seems to work just fine.
I'll tell my husband you said that because we argue about that because I don't do it. He always does it and he gets mad at me when I don't do it. So I'll tell him.
Yeah, let him.
Nate said you don't have to do it on the automatic car.
Unless you're on a hill, then then I don't care what you're driving.
Okay.
If you're on a flat surface, it's different. If you're in the parking lot at Target or whatever, you're probably okay.
All right. And one more addition to the Tesla story. As we reported yesterday, Tesla head Elon Musk is officially launching a new startup, Neuralink, that will attempt to fight brain injuries now. And he says he's going to work on the telepathy later.
Yeah. You know, that's good. Start with the most important stuff, the brain injuries. And we'll just get around to telepathy, you know. But it's nice that they have short-term and long-term goals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Microsoft detailed something a little less ambitious, laptop performance targets for a potential line of Windows laptops that would be built to compete with Google Chromebooks. Like Chromebooks, these new Windows Cloud OS laptops would run an operating system that uses web apps rather than apps stored locally on the computer itself. Now, there might be instances where there are documents and apps that are stored locally for offline mode, but the central idea here is you would be basically doing all your computing through the browser in the cloud. Microsoft is targeting about 10 hours of battery life, about 20 seconds from boot to a login screen, and then moving from that login screen to the desktop in about another 15 seconds. Microsoft does have an event coming up next month, and we might get some more details there. We'll find out. But these laptops would also run on quad-core processors and at least 4 gigabytes of RAM, and they'd have at least 32 gigabytes of local storage. That would be solid-state storage. And optional features like touchscreens and pens. And the target market for these devices like Chromebooks would be students and those looking for a cheap laptop. So what do you think of this, Megan? From my perspective, it really seems like this is something Microsoft should be doing because Chromebooks are selling like hotcakes. Mm-hmm. And they, given that they make PCs and laptops, probably a good idea, right?
Yeah, and the hardware that they've come up with lately has been very expensive, as well as the hardware that Apple has come up with, also really expensive. And so this whole market has been ignored in some extent. So yeah, I think that there's that market. There's also the education market, which we've talked about. I mean, they hinted at this last week, and we talked a little bit about it, that, yeah, there needs to be another option besides just Chromebooks in the classroom. Chromebooks are really easy to administer. We've heard from some people, who are in charge of administering school systems, and they're very easy to administer. There are some issues with privacy, as we talked about it earlier this week. So there's that to be considered too. And just like having old systems, when you think about like having an old Windows machine or like, an old iMac in the classroom, they're just, the teacher doesn't know how to use it. It's old technology. Getting something new in the classroom is great. Did they say a price? Did they give an idea of a price?
No mention of price yet or manufacturing partners or if, Microsoft is just going to go out all on its own and make these as Surface devices. There is some reporting out there that says that the likelihood is that Microsoft will have its own version of these cloud laptops. But hopefully we'll gain some clarity at that May 2nd Microsoft Spring Hardware event. Microsoft's developer conference Build is also coming May 12th. It kicks off then. So, hopefully we'll hear some more things there as well. But yeah, you're right. They've really gone for a premium high end and competition is good, of course. But at the same time, this does kind of feel a bit like a Me Too move. All of the stuff that we've seen here are things that can be had today on Chromebooks. So when I look at this, the biggest differentiator to me would be being locked into using Chrome, which is your only option on a Chromebook, or what would you be locked into if you were on a Windows web app laptop? Would that be probably Microsoft Edge, since that seems to be where they're putting all their browser efforts? They've kind of dumped Internet Explorer. I don't know. Personally, using Microsoft Edge, it really hasn't sold me yet. It hasn't won me over. I'm still bouncing between, my primary device is a Mac, but when I am using Windows machines, I'm still going to Chrome, still going to Firefox, and still trying these other things out. I'm not quite sure if I think Edge is ready for prime time as the only option.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that Microsoft has lots of apps for education, but I haven't experienced them. My kids are in public schools and they use Google apps for education, and they're just easier to use. And I wonder if they would be easy. They use them on the iPad, so I presume that Microsoft would allow them on these Chromebooks. It would be interesting because, and some people still love Word, and Google Docs is just not good enough for them. I could use either. I find Google Docs to be easier just simply because I've used it mostly from now on. But but it's cheaper too. So I don't know what that's gonna do for schools.
That's a great question. Microsoft has its Office 365 web-based Office suite, and it is more capable than what Google's thrown out there. But Google's option is free, and that's a great price.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got not one, but two pieces of Uber news, and neither of them are good. So do you want the bad news first, or do you want the bad news?
Well, let's start with the bad news.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
According to a memo obtained by Recode's Kara Swisher, former Attorney General Eric Holder needs more time to complete his internal investigation into the sexism and all-around toxic culture at Uber. The report is due out in May and started back in February 20th, so we're talking about 3 months to investigate. investigate. They've investigated hundreds of employees. Some have reported, according to Kara's report in Recode, that some of the main people still haven't been interviewed, even though it's been a couple months. And I'm wondering also, just Bill O'Reilly's ouster at Fox News probably had some effect. You know, people are, which is good, looking around and saying like, hey, you know, this isn't going to be tolerated anymore. And, you know, if Fox is doing it, we should probably do something about the way women are treated as well. So,
yeah, it's in some ways it's like they should have been doing this the whole time. And in some ways, I mean, it's good to hear that after, you know, story after story after controversy for months now about what sounds like a very toxic culture at Uber, something is being done in terms of just investigating. But since you're starting at the bottom, and maybe not speaking to some of those folks in positions of power yet, you know, does that feel like a shakedown or not? Is that intimidation? I mean, there's just so many questions that aren't answered. But this is Uber looking in at itself. One thing that I'd like to see is maybe Uber bringing in some sort of third party that maybe is a little less biased than its own, you know, company looking out for its own interests to assist in these sorts of things. Of course, Travis Kalanick, the CEO, after, you know, many, many controversies and getting caught in an Uber arguing with a driver by the driver's dash cam, has even come out and said that he's going to be looking to get some leadership training on his own. I forget how old he is, but I believe he's in his late 30s or early 40s.
He's over 40.
Yeah, so
he's
too he's a
old
grown,
to be saying, like,
man.
I'm still learning.
Yeah, so he's an adult. And it's, these are the sorts of things that need to be done. That being said, I do wonder, what the dialogue is inside of the company and on the board of directors and all these sorts of things. If what the outcome of this investigation will look like for him, because a lot of executives have been leaving. This is one of the most valuable startups in the world, and there's a lot of pressure on them to get this right. But I mean, this looks like a historical problem. So, mm-hmm. How much of a turning point this will be, really remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, they have brought in Eric Holder, so he is an outsider. He also looked into Airbnb when they were accused of racism for people, you know, turning down people who were black to Airbnb hosts doing that, as a lot of them doing it. And his report was it was light. It was kind of, you know, it was just, it was nicey, let's fix this. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So I don't think
it's not supremely confidence inspiring, to be honest.
Yes.
The work that Eric Holder did with Airbnb doesn't necessarily make me feel as though he'll be the guy to come into Uber and say, all right, this is how we're going to straighten mm-hmm. things up, and we got a clear, friendly path going forward.
Yeah, because it's not only that there was sexual harassment going on repeatedly, it was being ignored by
yes.
HR.
Yes.
And well, here's more bad news for Uber. According to data from expense report software Certify, Uber is losing ground in the ride-hailing race. They're still well ahead of competitors, including Lyft, but all the bad press combined with market saturation has caused them to have the lowest growth on record among business travelers. They grew 1% in the last quarter, whereas Lyft gained 2%. So they're still growing. And so this is a report that comes out every year. It's Spend Smart report for Q1 2017 from Certify that looks at all of, you know, tracks millions of business expenses. And if you look at like car rentals, they dropped 7%. Taxis dropped 9%. So ride hailing is definitely improving, but it looks like Lyft is gaining ground. And looking at the numbers, you kind of have to have a business degree, I think, to really understand them, because I think, Uber makes rides really cheap, spends a lot of money in the beginning in order to get people to use the service. And now they've sort of done that, and now they have to kind of start making money. So they have to make rides more expensive, pay drivers less, figure out, you know, driverless car systems. They have to do something because they're not going to keep growing at the rate they were growing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is just one quarter, so it's definitely too early to say that this is, the end of Uber or anything overstated and ridiculous like that. But this is the sort of thing this company needs to pay attention to, because going hand in hand with the stuff we were talking about before, all the controversies have been weighing on customers as much as the company itself. And of course, there was the delete Uber protests that came about that had a genuine impact on the company, which was just kind of fascinating to see. Now, Lyft does seem to be gaining just a little bit. And what matters is whether or not this will be sustained. I'm glad that you brought up the fact that back in the day, thanks to deep reservoirs of VC money, they were able to offer lower prices than really what they could offer as a sustainable business. They were able to do that and kind of subsidize their own costs in that way with VC money. Now they're at that point where they need to stop doing that. They need to build a solid, sustaining business plan. But I do wonder if maybe they could actually make that move again, because that would be the sort of thing that might bring people back. Now, a lot of folks have been using Lyft instead of Uber because of all these controversies. But when it comes down to it, you know, if you're opening both apps and one's cheaper, a lot of people might set that size, that stuff aside.
Mm-hmm.
Apple could be gearing up to challenge Google and Facebook in a still nascent market for tech. Internet service delivered from flying objects. According to a report from Bloomberg, Apple has hired two of the top people working on Google's internet serving satellite efforts, John Fenwick, Google's head of spacecraft operations, and Michael Trela, Google's head of satellite engineering. Fenwick and Trela will be part of a team run by Greg Duffy, the co-founder of Dropcam, who left his old smart home tech company shortly after Nest, which is owned by Google, bought them a couple years back. So it definitely seems like folks at Apple are looking to the sky for something. They're going to be doing something with satellites. They're building up this team. Of course, the first thought is internet delivery, because that's what these folks were working on at Google. But another option could be satellite imaging, which is helpful for maps and all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. What do you think about these moves?
Well, I think, you know, reading this, I learned some things I hadn't really thought about. Like, people have been trying to do satellite internet for a long time. You know, it's been trying to get to rural areas, trying to get broadband, fast internet access to rural areas. A lot of small companies have tried it and failed at it. And you know, it's sort of the article, the piece in Bloomberg kind of made it out to be that they're weary. And so they need someone with piles of cash, for example, Apple or Facebook or Google, to really take over and to have, you know, lots of engineers, really smart people and money and time to say, like, how are we really going to do it? So that was interesting to me. I mean, part of me also hopes that they're going to try to get to Mars or something because I guess one of the guys came from the spacecraft division, which you could think of as satellites for internet access, or you could think of, you know, starting a new home in the sky.
Oh, Tim Cook versus Elon Musk. That would be something, right? who could get us there first and in style is a good question. Mm-hmm. It should be noted that Apple is also reportedly funding a Boeing project that will use about 1,000 low Earth orbit satellites to deliver internet service as well. Of course, when it comes to big names in tech, Facebook and Google are trying to dabble in these areas as well. With Facebook, they've been working on solar-powered drones, and recently at their F8 Developers Conference this week, they mentioned helicopters to deliver internet service during times of emergency. But Google has also dabbled in, of course, internet-serving satellites, drones, and hot air balloons. So to a certain extent, this might be kind of them covering themselves, as you mentioned. But I do wonder, though, if there's any chance, maybe, you know, maybe this is too far of an outlier, but if there's any chance that this could be used for TV service, because of course we have satellite TV, that's an entrenched thing. Maybe a multi-purpose satellite that's doing a little bit of everything. But for a long time, we've been hearing about Apple and their plan to disrupt, television and offer a paid TV service for cord cutters. We still haven't seen it, but if they're going to be delivering internet service anyways, you know, why not actually finally make the TV thing real?
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of that. I still hope they make a rocket, and I hope they make it glossy like the self-driving car, and I hope the rocket takes pictures in portrait mode.
Just jet black everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Glossy. Because wouldn't it be great if you could, like, have pictures of planets in portrait mode?
Reflecting off of the rocket itself.
Yes.
I wonder if Johnny Ive has been thinking about that.
Probably.
I hope so. Well, Sam Moscovich is here to tell us about what virtual reality on Facebook is really like. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage, the sponsor of this episode. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. If you've ever tried to get a loan, you know that it can be a real pain, the entire process, shuffling between banks in person, paperwork, waiting to hear back through phone calls, emails. It's arduous in just about every way. But Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans is different because they found a way to streamline the process. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust and who has your best interest in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you'll get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. Don't waste your time searching through stacks of paperwork and more lines in the bank and all that stuff. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time on their website to make sure you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030, and we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
Earlier this week, Facebook dipped its toes into the virtual reality world with the surprise launch of Spaces on Oculus. Sam Moscovich from Ars Technica is here to tell us what he thinks. Welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. Happy Friday to all of you in the real world. Well, I mean, you seem real. I'm looking at you on a screen. I don't have the thing right here. We're talking about Facebook VR, right? Isn't that where we're at?
Yeah. That's where we're at. It's hard to tell anymore, isn't it?
Well, I have been using it a little bit. Facebook Spaces was teased last year at Oculus Connect, which is run by Facebook. We've got, you know, the combination Facebook-Oculus beast. And this app rolled out after Mark Zuckerberg announced it this week at the F8 conference. Not to be confused with Fast and Furious 8. You know, that's a different F8. This is a less interesting one. But yeah, be careful, by the way, to whoever's playing this video, because it has inappropriate stuff in it about halfway through.
What happens in VR stays in VR.
Nope, not when I'm using it. But the idea is that Facebook Spaces lets you connect with other people on your Facebook, in your Facebook group, your friends list, and hang out. Up to four people can be in a single chat room instance, and you all pop up around a table, and you have a few tools at your disposal. You have a pencil, it lets you draw three-dimensional objects that you can then pick up and wave around with your hands. It lets you grab media from your Facebook feed, and that's about it.
What do you mean grab? Like, I could grab, like, my favorite dog photos or videos and throw them around, or...
You can grab your images and videos and 360-degree image and videos if for any reason you own a compatible giant camera that's in the Facebook format for 360-degree video, and throw it into the room. You can hand it off as a little photo. It looks like a little photo, and you hand it to other people. You can actually grab a selfie stick inside of Facebook VR and hold that up with the other virtual participants and go, cheese. And you can call friends of yours who are not in VR and have them appear as little tablets. Kind of like the cheesy thing where there's a tablet on wheels, only there's no wheels. It's just a little floating tablet, and you see their webcam feed, and you move it around, and you can show them whatever part of the virtual world you want. So you can show them your virtual face, which is made up of an avatar that you create yourself. You can show them the three-dimensional things you've drawn. You can show them photos, 2D photos that you have floating in your fake 3D world. There's a few of these tools, but not a ton. They're all linked to Facebook. It's not a bazillion things. It's just a few things.
Well, Sam, I want to know how you feel about the avatars, having tried this out and being an avatar in this virtual world yourself. They look pretty goofy. They're like halfway between a Muppet and like the little Wii characters you find on the Nintendo systems.
I will tell you, the Mii characters, are as old as they are way more robust, which is really sad. In terms of what you can create that looks like you have a tool set of limited eyes, nose, ears. You only get three ear options, for example, if you're an ear enthusiast. Too bad, so sad. So the customization is pretty bad, and it also wants to auto-generate an image of yourself. Video watchers can see myself testing it out right now. You can generate a thing from your own photos, but it doesn't let you pick from all of your photos at the, as of press time. This is a beta, and they make that very clear that it's totally in testing. So the auto avatar generation stinks. However, once you're in with your not quite accurate avatar with limited hair options and limited color options and things like that, what's really interesting and what Facebook app already nails in this beta is the liveliness of these avatars, between how their hands move around, how their joints move around, how eyes make eye contact and faces are lively. Because as you talk while wearing your headset in VR, your little VR person, their mouth moves pretty decently. It doesn't completely convey emotion, but it works. That's me eating a pizza on the video feed, by the way. So I think that's really impressive, because there have been other VR chat things. And what I think Facebook nails here that some people may not appreciate is how creepy it can look if you don't get things right. If eyes don't move in an interesting or realistic way, if mouths don't move in an interesting way. Rec Room, I think, is the best example, where faces look just like little creepy dolls. And I think this finds that right balance between being animated and being kind of fake, because they're not going uncanny valley. It's definitely cartoonish and Muppety. And yeah, I was really impressed already in beta how that's working.
Tell me about the laughing, because we've seen these videos at as you mentioned, at F8, at Oculus Connect last year. And it seems like every time someone laughs, they all laugh the same kind of weird, like creepy, gigantic mouth, like throw your head back kind of way. Are there any other options for laughing, or is it just everyone laughs that same way?
Well, you're not really having your laughs truly recognized. You're holding down directions. This, by the way, is Oculus Touch exclusive, which means you need to have the expensive Oculus Rift headset, a high-powered PC, and the hand controllers called Touch. You can get a Rift and Touch controllers combination for $600, and that's without the computer. So when you're holding these little Touch controllers in your hands, you can touch with a joystick. That's not visible in this demo here because they hide the joystick part. And you press that in certain directions, and your face will just light up with like a shocked face or an angry face or a laughing face. So it's not recognizing how you talk or the volume or things like that to show emotion. It's just recognizing whether you're talking and then sort of animates accordingly, which is still, to me, pretty impressive. But they're going to need to get a lot more advanced stuff in terms of face tracking and things like that. And Oculus right now does not really track your face in a realistic way.
I can't help watching this video. It's really fascinating. So you said there are limited hair options. Did you get to choose like a Bitmoji, or did it just look at all your Facebook pictures and then make your avatar based on all the photos that you'd pasted?
It looked at my six most recent ones that I tagged as myself, which I don't generally do. Other people had tagged them. I don't like giving Facebook that sort of data. Mm-hmm. It didn't let me go in and individually pick out any of my Facebook images. After that, I could then tap on my face with my virtual finger and pick out certain features that look a little more like me. I really struggled to actually get a beard because I had to press my hand in the just right way in order to like touch my beard. So that was a little annoying. So It kind of worked. The guy in this video demo, who's Kyle Orland, he's another Ars Technica guy. He looks pretty decent. He kind of looks like Justin Timberlake, though, is the problem there.
Well, I mean, we've had Kyle on the show before. I think it's he looks like him. I think they did a good job.
And everything in motion is better than everything static. So screenshots and motion are totally different, in my opinion. By the way, on the video, I'm right now putting a 360-degree image in the scene, so it's a beach, but it doesn't look 3D. It really looks like a snow globe. So that's an issue with 360-degree photos. So I suppose if you want to share those with people, this is a better way to do it than to like invite them to your house and slap a cardboard on their face. But it's, you know, it's got limits.
So yeah, you have to have an Oculus. You have to have the full Oculus setup. You have to have a Facebook account, obviously. So what if you wanted to, I mean, how would you go about, I know you and Nate were supposed to meet in Spaces, but something you didn't.
we were on at the wrong time.
Yeah. One of you blew each other off. I don't know to say
Skyping
who.
Skyping is already tough enough without having to also coordinate. Okay. Put on your VR headset right now. But the other issue is that when you're in the VR world, there's no keyboard. I cannot send messages to people. All I can do is send them voice call requests, which is super annoying because when I first got it, I tried to communicate with friends and they all said, "Why are you calling me?"
Yeah, that's what happens. When someone calls you through Facebook Messenger, you're just like, "What? What?" I mean, when someone calls me anytime now, like, "Why are you calling me on the telephone?" Right. All right, well, let's move on. There's a new Rick and Morty virtual reality game that brings together a job simulator, which is one of my favorite VR games, and then a game called Accounting, which I have never played and frankly does not sound fun. What can you tell us about this game?
Wubba-dubba-dub! It is time to get your Jan Michael Jordan. There's a lot of dumb Rick and Morty related lines and quotes and in jokes I could rattle off. And the reason I would do so is because this is fan service to the extreme. Oh. And what I mean is this is like almost two full episodes of the TV show. Wow. In terms of the amount of humor and the amount of original writing and the amount of callbacks to things that you're familiar with in the series. What happens is you get slapped into VR and you do things that are similar to the game Job Simulator, which means you're just grabbing things with your hands and throwing them around and kind of goofing off while the characters from the show are barking orders and commands at you. And they're doing it in Rick and Morty fashion, which means you're a Morty clone. And because you're a clone, you can be killed. And you're killed almost instantly and then brought back to life. It's just this the kind of thing where someone who is completely unfamiliar with the show would say, "This is kind of weird and abrasive." And a person who loves the show would say, "Oh, my God, Rick from Rick and Morty just killed me. That's so hilarious," because he is the sadistic, nihilistic weirdo. So it's really not that interesting in terms of gameplay. If you're not familiar with Rick and Morty, if you jump in, it almost instantly makes you feel dumb for not getting the jokes and not being familiar with stuff. That being said, if you are a Rick and Morty fan, what's really cool, in my opinion, is how much original scripted content has been delivered for this, meaning they're not just taking gags from other episodes and slapping them in awkwardly. They really understand this is not the 90s when licensed cartoon games were terrible. There's a certain amount of quality you can get if you just do some original writing and legwork. And they did that. There's throwbacks to things that are from the show. For example, the Meeseeks characters who are supposed to do your bidding and then die. They are there to do your bidding and then die. And it's really funny and clever the way it's done. And there's other little Easter eggs and hidden bits about the series, little magazines that are tucked away we can grab that refer to things that were from the show that repeat some gags. And then there's one virtual reality inside a virtual reality moment. And I'm not going to spoil what it is, but it's just this goofy fan service sort of thing that I really enjoyed. So the biggest hurdle I would say is if you don't already own a VR kit and you're a huge fan of Rick and Morty, is this worth, you know, $1,000, $1,200? No. But if you already happen to have plunked down for VR stuff, you already had all the kit, and you're a big fan of Rick and Morty, this is $30, easy $30 to spend. It's a tiny bit pricey, but it's a combination of unique jokes and you being the second person mover of the comedy, which I think it gets right.
So I'm a huge Rick and Morty fan. It's like literally one of my favorite shows ever. When you speak about it being scripted and feeling like two full episodes of the show, is it the sort of thing that is kind of nodding to season three, which is going to be coming pretty soon? And we've been waiting a long time between seasons two and three for this, Rick and Morty fans. So is it that sort of thing? Is it kind of hyping up that, or does it really stand alone as its own kind of self-contained story?
Both. It doesn't refer to season three. They aim a little bit higher, and that's as much as I want to say before away any jokes. But it doesn't seem to be the kind of thing that's required to watch the show as much as because Rick and Morty, what's sort of brilliant about it is that it's got that Doctor Who sort of feeling in which every episode is kind of standalone, even though there is lore and other stuff that is developed over the episodes. Because it is this sort of sci-fi wackiness where you just warp to different places and get it. So, yeah, you don't need to play this in order to enjoy the show. But I don't think it's good to stream it. I don't think it's good just to go on Twitch and watch someone else do it. I think you do miss something if you are not doing these things yourself, because there is a playfulness and a silliness to being the person that Rick and Morty are shouting at. So steal a VR kit if you need to. It does work with the HTC Vive and with Oculus Touch. You got to have one that lets you walk around with your hands as controllers. So no Gear VR, no sit down with a gamepad. You need one of those two specific rigs in order to get this to work.
So what's the replayability like on this game? Is it the sort of thing that even if you are a Rick and Morty fan, you're going to want to play multiple times? Or is this kind of like you've gone through the experience and that's pretty much it and it's over?
That is a one and done kind of experience. It is not, there's the thing about Job Simulator I really liked is that it is has a lot more to do in terms of playing around and making your own humor. This is more of you are working with the dialogue, reacting to it, and it is kind of one and done. And I'm a guy who likes to play episodes of Rick and Morty over and over. I feel like I've seen the pilot episode maybe 27 times. So I don't think this does as well to strap back into and relive again, except for a couple of the snippets. So there's certain parts I guess you could replay multiple times, but it's just not as cozy as, you know, hopping on your couch and tapping play episode again.
I have a Rick and Morty general question. I love The Simpsons, but I hate South Park. Would I like Rick and Morty, or do you need more comparisons than those two? Are they not like either of those shows?
I'm not really ready to recommend this to you, Megan.
Okay. Okay, Sam.
One, I feel like that could come into your heart, but it's not. It doesn't. There's a balance between. Community is a much better comparison point, but wackier than Community. Community always went back and forth between really wacky, makes no sense, and heartfelt friends and family stuff coming together. And Rick and Morty is similar, but it has more of the wacky, a little bit less of the heart, but just enough of it. Dan Harmon from Community is on here and sort of grounds things in this human, funny, family emotional way, but it is also super nihilistic and people just are killed and things are just thrown out in this really messed up nihilism humor. That would be an important phrase to respect and understand before you jump into Rick and Morty.
Yeah, it's, tell me if you think I'm wrong here, Sam, but I feel like it's kind of a mixture of Back to the Future with South Park to a certain extent.
Oh, okay.
The Simpsons is great, and there are some similar sensibilities there with the family concept, but... You know, it really is kind of the relationship of Rick and Morty, and Rick is like this mad scientist, and Morty's like the dumb teenager who goes along on his adventures with them. And that changes over time, but that's really the core of the show.
Okay.
Do you think that's about spot on?
I mean, I think there's a little bit more of the Community aspect in terms of the humor, but absolutely the Back to the Future corner, sort of zaniness. I mean, the show was originally created as a really messed up satire of Back to the Future with a cartoon about... Doc and Morty or Doc and Marty. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but do not try to watch it at work.
Okay. Good to know. All right. Thank you. All right. One more question. The original StarCraft is now free. We need to know why this matters. Well, Nate might know why it matters. I don't know why it matters. Tell me.
Because people around the world love StarCraft. This might actually, I am shocked to see how many people are freaking out about the fact that StarCraft, the very first one from the 90s,
yeah, it was being like 1998, made free, right?
It's a huge deal that this is free because there are a lot of people around the world who like this style of game, who want to play this game on lower end computers, for example, at PC bang cafes around the world, and who prefer its army navigation manipulation over StarCraft II. Blizzard, who made StarCraft II, wanted that to be the new esport because StarCraft I has been so huge in Eastern Europe and Korea in particular. And so StarCraft II was built to go, all right, you love StarCraft. We're going to make this even more TV friendly and even more esports friendly. Yeah, most of the big players are moving back to StarCraft I. Most of the TV shows are going back to StarCraft I. And Blizzard isn't about to give up their ability to be a part of that and to get that spread out and to make money off of it. So they're coming out with a remaster. And this freeing of the original is a way to sell the remaster. That remaster is dated for this summer. They haven't said exactly when. And they're just going to take all of the logic, all of the quirks, and all of the ways the original game played and slap it with 4K paint, meaning you can just take the highest resolution monitor you could imagine, and the game will look beautiful, but play exactly like the original. In fact, it's going to be so exactly the same that the person with the free copy and the person with the paid remaster will be able to meet online and play each other without noticing a difference.
I think it's great that they're releasing the original with the remaster coming, specifically because even though the remaster will probably look better and be a little bit more slick, some people do like the rough edges and some people do like the pixel style art and all that. So, you know, there's a novelty here, but it's a kind of a genius way to hype up the remastered version.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant because they're not, they were already, you could pretty much get StarCraft 1 already just by grabbing an old CD key and putting it in. Like they were fine with giving you the updated version. It wasn't hard to get, but you know, $15, $20 versus $0, that's not a bad deal. And that's an easy way to fill an entire PC Bang Cafe with licensed copies of StarCraft. That's no small thing. You're just going to see a lot more people around the world concurrently playing StarCraft over the coming weeks. And that's going to look good for Blizzard.
Well, Sam, thanks as always for joining us and elucidating all of these topics that need elucidating. If I ever do decide to watch Rick and Morty, I will let you know what I think.
You come over to my house the instant you want to.
Okay.
I might pay for that flight.
Okay.
I have an uncomfortable futon, but a lot of virtual reality headsets and every episode of Rick and Morty. If that sounds like something other than a total nightmare, you're welcome to it.
It sounds like something. I'm not sure what it sounds like.
The beginning of a terrible horror movie franchise. Yes.
It's also on Hulu if you want to watch it on your own couch,
okay.
Megan.
Okay.
I
think to have the full experience, I have to be on Sam's futon.
Yeah, because then I'm going to be, oh, this funny fart's about to happen. Yeah. Unless that guy.
Plus, we can play a little Settlers of Catan, and who knows what will happen, right?
All this. It's all real.
It's all real.
Sam Iskovich is a culture reporter at Ars Technica and at Sam Red on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming on.
Have a great weekend, you too.
Later. You too. All right. It's time for a little feedback. Scott writes about our conversation yesterday regarding a MasterCard with a fingerprint reader built into the card itself. He says, the issues and slowness with chip readers on credit cards is not so much of an inherent problem with the technology itself, but it appears to be a problem unique to the United States of America. Also, I don't understand how much of a benefit a fingerprint reader built into a card would be. The only issue it could address would be in-person retail purchases, situation where there are likely security cameras recording the transaction anyway. Maybe if the card payment industry really wanted to improve things, instead of coming out with an easily bypassed niche feature for a diminishing use case, they would instead learn how other countries successfully solved the chip issue many years ago. And I gotta say, I think he's onto something there. You know, we've been hearing about chips in Japan and Europe and all these other countries for so long. And then finally, when it comes here, it's been so disappointing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, immediately when we were talking about this yesterday, everyone in the chat room who doesn't live in the United States was saying it works fine here. It's fine. It's fast. And so, yeah, I don't exactly know. I haven't noticed the slowness so much as just people not having, it's just not working at all. Like just saying, oh, the chip doesn't work.
I've definitely run into the slowness. There are sometimes, you know, I'll be buying a sandwich or something, plug in the card, just waiting 30, 45 seconds. And sometimes you have to do the transaction over again. You know, sometimes you just wait and it works. It's just kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm.
Well, TNT's fan of the day is Shivani Patel, who posted this adorable photo with her golden doodle. She says she watches TNT in the mornings while getting ready for work and playing with her pup. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT with or without your puppies. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it.
All right, one more story before we go.
Couldn't miss this one.
Oh, it's so good. The internet has had a field day today at the expense of a San Francisco startup called Juicero. The reason? The company sells a $400 internet-connected smartphone app-controlled machine that can use up to 4 tons of force to squeeze out about 8 ounces of juice into a cup. The juice comes from plastic pouches that are full of cleaned and chopped up fruits and vegetables. And Bloomberg got a hold of a Juicero and squeezed one of the pouches with their own hands and found that the same amount of juice with about the same taste comes out, which begs the question, what exactly does this $400 machine do? People are going nuts on the internet. It's pretty remarkable stuff. Juicero's CEO wrote a post on Medium today in the aftermath of all this, essentially begging customers not to squeeze the pouches with their own bare hands. The CEO, Jeff Dunn, also argued that the value of the Juicero and its $400 price tag comes in more than just the machine itself, since the company has what he calls a closed-loop food safety system that lets them deliver fresh, raw produce in the span of about 8 days, with each pack delivering a consistent combination of taste and nutrition. And this is fascinating to me. I don't have one of these juicers. I haven't spent $400 on one, but I'd really love to just get one of these pouches and try it out myself with my hands. But you can only buy the pouches if you've bought the machine, which is just frustrating. So that we're seeing on screen right now is the pulp that comes out after the juice has been squeezed. They want you to throw that in the compost, and then you take the plastic pouch itself, and you can actually mail it back to them, and they'll recycle it for you, which is very nice. Props to Juicero for the recycling aspect. But what do you think about this, Megan?
I think it's hilarious, and it just is everything that's wrong with the internet right now. But admittedly, it does look like she's squeezing very hard. Like that, you know, that could give you carpal tunnel or something eventually. And, you know, the more I thought about this, and I gave this a lot of thought today, I mean, isn't that kind of what, like, a Keurig does, like, you know, and people go crazy over the Keurig. Like, I have an AeroPress at home, you know, you put the coffee in and you go psh, and you have to make that sound. you use your own muscle, and I've had it for 3 years. And you know, I'm kind of done with it. Like like, I don't know if I need to, I have one of the screens instead of like a little filter, and now it leaks a lot of places. And I just like threw up my hands, like, I'm getting a coffee maker. I'm not going to get a Keurig, but I am going to get a coffee maker, which is basically the same thing. It's not $400. I'm going to get like a, I don't know, I'm not a coffee snob. So I like, I'm going to get like the $20 coffee maker, not $400. So there's that. But I mean, we do a lot of things that we use machines to do a lot of things that we could do by ourselves.
That being said, a lot of the Keurigs aren't $400, right?
No.
I mean, they're a little bit more affordable than that. When the Juicero first launched last March, the machine, the press, was $700. So they actually had to knock that down. I'm glad you brought up the Keurig comparison, because on that comparison, basically being the Keurig of juice, they were able to raise money from Google Ventures, Kleiner Perkins, and Campbell's Soup. And reportedly, both Yves Bihar and Johnny Ive had input on the design of the machine. With so many brilliant minds and so much money in the bank, it's kind of amazing that they never squeezed the pack themselves to see what would happen.
I'm sure they squeezed that pack.
Did they just assume no one was ever going to do that themselves? I mean, this just seems like the sort of problem that this company shouldn't be in.
Right.
If they would have just, you know.
Well, that is a good point. Like, did they squeeze the pack themselves and think, like, we're going to fool everyone? People are idiots. Or are they the idiots who didn't even think to squeeze it themselves? That is the big question that I want answered.
Who's the idiot here?
Yeah, who's the idiot?
Oh, if only, you know, we need this clarity. Juicero, we need this clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. And you can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leaving us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. You can also hit us up on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And one of the ways that we find these wonderful stories, like the Juicero incident, I like to call it, is our Tech News Today subreddit. That is at technewstoday.reddit.com. Go there, submit some stories, upvote, downvote, comment, join us. And you can subscribe to the show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, please let me know, because there was a big chat room discussion. Parking brake on always or only on the hill? I think the on always is winning in the chat room. There's a lot of people who disagree with you, but I don't know. Like, it's supposed to, I guess it makes your transmission last longer.
By putting less, well, hey, I always do it out of habit, so I don't even really think about it. But yeah, it could.
So tweet at me at Megan Maroney if you want to have your say on whether I always put the parking brake on or not.
And tweet at me at Nate OG. Thanks to our technical director, Anthony, Mario for helping out in the studio, Victor for editing the show, and thank you for talking tech with us today. And Megan will see you Monday. Jason Howell will be back on Monday. I've just been filling in for him. But thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
All right.